Welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Larkin Rose about government and violence, freedom, liberty, but also, of course, the murder and mayhem that we've seen throughout history. And, you know, basically a strategy of how to begin to stop this, coming to some kind of resolution to many of these problems. And Larkin has some great ideas, of course, and suggestions in terms of how to go about doing that. I wanted to return to one point that we talked about in the first segment there. I guess justice, Larkin, if you believe that this is a myth, basically, something that doesn't exist, will it ever be a reality? I mean, to me, we could kind of go hand in hand a little bit with equality, I guess, or fairness in a way. These are ideals, of course, that we're trying to strive for, perhaps, but at the same time, are they ever going to be achieved? Because, you know, as you alluded to before, we're living on a planet where we don't fully understand nature, of course, but what we have been able to observe from nature, many of these ideals that we're trying to live up on doesn't exist within the natural world. So are these just kind of, you know, flaws, if you will, of our mind, of how things should be and not be? Are we disassociated from nature? Will we ever achieve some of these kind of ideals that we strive for? What do you think?
Well, I think the more people are willing to think about things and you know, look to their own conscience, but also look to their own just rational mind, and the more they try to figure out what they even mean by justice, the closer we get to it. Now, I don't think we ever get there, because to all the way get there would require everyone in the world understanding all of the universe, which I don't think is going to happen anytime soon. but I think we can get the vast majority of the way there if people drop the belief in authority, because in their daily lives, most people already understand that it's not okay to attack other people and steal their stuff. And, you know, there's a small percentage that doesn't seem to have a problem with doing that. And so, you know, the rest of us, if we're scary enough, we can deter them from that. But most people don't want that. That's not the sort of society they want to live in, with everybody attacking and robbing each other. And so there are always like areas where there's some issue and people disagree about what justice means. Well, that guy should win. No, that guy should win. And so I think that, you know, the nitpicking can go on forever.
Sure.
Yeah. About the details. But the overall, I think we already have enough agreement with most of the people on the planet to have far more peace and peaceful coexistence and prosperity than we have now, if they will just give up the idea that there's a certain gang that has an exemption from justice, it has an exemption from morality. It's allowed to steal. It's allowed to initiate violence. Because again, in their daily lives, most people understand enough how to be a human being and get along with others without violence, but they're taught that violence by way of politics, it isn't just permissible, it's noble and great, and it's your civic duty to go select some master to violently control your neighbor and take his money. And so, and that's why I have any hope at all. And that's, you know, the point of my book, The Most Dangerous Superstition, is to point out to people, this lie doesn't match your own moral code. It doesn't match your own values and your own priority. It basically takes the goodness of, you know, millions or billions of normal people and twists it into fuel for evil by tricking them into thinking there is such a thing as legitimate government and thinking that advocating violence by way of that is perfectly okay. So these people are, and I like to use the analogy of an island. If you stick 100 people on an island, their first thought is not, let's pick someone who gets to boss the rest of us around and hurt us if we disobey him. You know, that doesn't pop into anybody's head. On the little scale, they think, well, how can we cooperate and what do we need? And, you know, how can we trade with each other? Like, you know, does anybody here know how to build a fire? And I'll help you build your hut if you help me build mine. And, you know, the natural way people are, if they realize they're in charge, they're the ones responsible, they have to figure things out, most people do pretty well. And they don't naturally think, who do I bow to? Who has the right to boss me around and control me? But on a larger scale, they've been trained to think that that's necessary, that that's essential to humanity, that we have a giant parasitic gang that bosses people around and hurts anybody who disobeys. So it isn't even, it's this weird contradictory superstition sitting on top of what is basically a decent enough moral code for society to work just fine 99% of the time, except for this big stupid mythology called government sitting on top of it and messing everything up. So when it, other than that, I'm pretty comfortable trusting human beings. And for the ones that I don't trust, that's why I carry a Glock. But for the most part, people know how to be human and civilized, except when it comes to politics, and suddenly they're all cheering for mass violence and feeling good about it. So just removing that lie, like if I thought everybody was like genuinely malicious and evil, I'd just be running for the hills and being a hermit for the rest of my life. Like, well, I don't have the ability to talk somebody evil into please being a good person. However, because it's just a provably insane superstition that is messing up people's goodness and their virtue, that gives me some hope. And I know thousands and thousands of people now who have gone through this process and realized, wow, I thought I was the good guy when I was voting and being a good Democrat or Republican or whatever. And now I realize I was advocating immoral violence against millions and millions of people I don't even know. And so, you know, I've seen lots and lots of individual cases where people can basically rescue their virtue from their indoctrination, from their authoritarian mythology that they were taught to believe, and come out the other side as peaceful, good, moral people who actually know how to peacefully coexist.
Well, exactly. Misdirecting good intentions, that's what government does really well. And you know, because when people are morally convinced of something, they fight it, you know, obviously even more. So this is how they've played the game for a long time, that they claim that to represent, well, first of all, it's the lie of, you know, that government represents the people's choices and everything else. That's one step. But, you know, a lot of people are seeing through that right now. But this kind of misdirection of these good intentions, that's what, you know, because again, as you say, a lot of people, they want to live a good life, you know, no violence or anything like that. They just want to, you know, do their own thing and live in peace, if you will. But what has happened is that the most violent people and the most parasitical people have risen to the top to take control of the system and gain control over it and use it for their advantage. But still this kind of moral kind of code lingers on, if you will, and people haven't just kind of connected the dots and realized this yet.
Yeah, and it's pretty, I mean, these are really simple concepts to understand if you're approaching it rationally, but because the belief in government, I was actually just talking about this on a different show, because it's actually a religion, the belief in government is completely a religious faith, that's why people react all irrationally and emotionally if you just start to ask them a few questions about, well, how did Congress get the power to rob people? Like, did you give it to them? I don't have that power, and I'm pretty sure you don't. So how did they end up with it? But you can see from people's emotional, just terrified reactions, because the idea of their mythological deity known as government going away scares the heck out of them. So they know it's necessary, and they represent us, and they, you know, they spout off the doctrine we're taught, the gospel according to government, which is just completely insane, but it makes them feel better, like the consent of the governed, you know. And these are things I go through in the Most Dangerous Superstition. There's no such thing as consent of the governed. If there's consent, it's voluntary. If somebody's governing, they're controlling somebody else. They're mutually exclusive. And the idea that they represent us. Look, there's a gang over there. It bosses us around and takes our money, and it hurts us if we disobey. To think that they're representing us by doing that makes exactly as much sense as saying, oh, look at that carjacker representing that driver by pointing a gun at him and taking his car. But people repeat these things that don't. And my all-time favorite is, we are the government. And that one I just have to shake my head at. It's like, you know, there's a bunch of people over there who demand your money and hurt you if you don't hand it over. You really can't distinguish between you and them? you really think you are them? So it was your idea to threaten to cage yourself if you don't hand over money to yourself? I mean, how insane does this belief system have to be before people can step back and say, oh, it's a violent ruling class. It bosses us around and hurts us if we disobey. But this, the things that people are taught and they repeat, which are just insane, it's all designed to have them hang on to this blind faith religious belief in a mythical deity called government, and to believe it's real and it's legitimate and it's magically has superhuman rights somehow.
Well, and then at the same time, you know, another layer of programming that we deal with on top of that is that this in some way kind of comes out of science, you know, rationality. We've moved away from, you know, religion towards democracy now. And so you have that layer on top of it. I mean, there's just, who knows how effective actually the programming goes in this sense, because I don't understand how people think or how they put it together. And it's difficult to actually, you know, try to go back to that state and kind of realize how that goes about. And by the way, while we're on that topic, how did you manage to kind of break out of the statist mind control program that's taking most people at the early stages in their life with schooling and, you know, the parents and everything else? How did you manage to break out of that?
I don't entirely know. And this is something, you know, because what I do is try to help other people escape it, basically try to help other people go through what I went through, hopefully more quickly and less painfully. So I've, you know, spent lots of time trying to figure out, you know, first of all, why I didn't let go of it for so long, and then why I did. And I don't even know. You know, I can talk about how I looked into it and I looked for inconsistencies and whittled away pieces of statism until I realized I had whittled away the last piece, and that if you describe legitimate government, it isn't government anymore. It's just people being equals and dealing with each other voluntarily. Like, I can describe the rational thought process, but to me, that's actually secondary and almost just kind of an afterthought, because to me, and this is, you know, from personal experience of talking to thousands of statists, and some of them escape it and some of them don't, but watching the weird thing that people have this switch inside their head, and they either dare to flip the switch and reconsider their paradigm, or they don't. And it's not even, logic doesn't do that. I don't think, the way people think of themselves as being rational and progressive, in theory, if you make a logical argument and it makes sense, everybody would say, oh, okay, you're right. In reality, that doesn't happen, because it's a superstition that's pounded into their heads. I still don't know what makes some people dare to step back from their paradigm and look at it. I don't know what made me do that. Yep. And I don't know what made me not do that for years and years before. And so that's still just a mystery to me. So the best I can do is, you know, I'll put all these ideas in front of people and hope they flip that switch. But I've long since learned you can't flip that switch for somebody else. If they don't want to look at their paradigm, they will do the most amazing mental gymnastics imaginable to avoid the most obvious truths in the universe. But if they decide to flip that switch, you know, my goal is to have everything sitting in front of them, ready for them for the moment they decide to flip that switch and start looking at their paradigm, so they can go, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, never mind, I'm an anarchist. Which has happened a lot recently. I mean, I get almost daily emails from people telling me, you know, that in a matter of days or weeks, they all the way got rid of their belief in the God called government, and which is a little bit embarrassing because it took me years and years. But I see a lot of people going through it a lot faster these days, and it's
well,
it's
you've refined it for them, Larkin. That's why, right? You've gotten better at expressing this, and I think it, you know, also the contributor efforts of a lot of people have kind of just made it so much easier and accessible, right?
Well, I hope I've helped, but I think there's something weirder than that going on. I think it's like the 100th monkey thing, where humanity is getting to that threshold where it's actually able to think about this.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't even know how to really word it without it sounding completely bizarre, but it does seem to me like far more people are able to have the conversation today. And, you know, there's lots of people out here trying to make it as understandable and simple and publicly available and all that. But flipping that switch is always an internal choice of individuals. And for some reason, I see people flipping that switch all over the place now. And for the first 10 years that I was saying this stuff, you know, I don't even think I had a dozen people that I saw flip the switch. And I don't know what's changing, but it's really exciting to see this many more people able to think about it. Because as soon as they think about it and get into the rational discussion, they, you know, they end up at the same place. And I've told a bunch of people, you know, because I've gotten to where I can sense when they flip the switch. You know, that when they say, okay, yeah, initiating violence is bad, but well, how would we organize this? And on occasion, I'll pause and say, okay, in about 3 months, you'll be an anarchist. You know, now let's get back to the conversation. But, you know, once I've seen that switch flipped, I know where they're going to end up pretty much. I can almost even time it.
Right.
But if that switch doesn't flip, nothing in the world will get them there. I mean, I have people who are constitutionalists who just won't flip that switch. I've known them for 15 years and they know I'm not letting go. And I've known other people who were devout socialists and flipped the switch and a day later they're anarcho-capitalists. And I just don't know what makes people flip that switch, and I don't know why so many more are doing it, but I'm thrilled to see it. And I just hope to, like I said, have as much stuff sitting in front of them for when they dare to flip that switch to make their basically deprogramming be as fast and comfortable as possible, instead of the slow intellectual kicking and screaming that I did for years trying to hang on to statism. And I see it happening all over the place.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's really exciting, and you are doing that. You're part of that process for a lot of people, and you're good at it too. I mean, and I agree with you as well. There has to be something inside of people that initiates this. I guess it's a spark, and that spark is igniting in a lot of people right now. I think it's great. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and there's, I mean, that's the only reason I have any hope for humanity is I see sparks all over the place. I don't know what causes them. I'm pretty darn sure I don't cause them. I don't, you know, like I said, I can put the logic out there and the reasoning. And I often think of the mental exercise of what would the me of today say to the me of 20 years ago to try to make him wise up and
right.
Get out of the stupid superstition. I'm not sure that I could say anything that would have made him flip the switch any sooner. You know, I can have all my arguments and all my reasoning and stuff, but it has to be an internal thing. There has to be that spark.
Yeah.
And I'm convinced that I am not causing the spark, but when people choose the spark, when it happens inside them, I'm always happy to hear people tell me, you know, once I started looking into this and I read your book or I saw this video, that, you know, I love hearing people tell me that I helped them do the journey really fast and really easily and got to the, you know, finish line in a week or a day or something. But that initial spark is still just a complete mystery to me. It's happening all over the place now, but I don't know why.
Well, then you're the oxygen around that flame that helps to turn it into a fire, if you will.
Yeah, I'll take that job. I'll be the oxygen.
By the way, Larkin, you had another great video that I'd like to talk a little bit about in terms of, well, deeming people as being terrorists. Obviously, this is like the big ongoing battle, if you will, of how we're all slowly being turned into terrorists. And I think that's another thing that more and more people are waking up to and realizing. But basically, the tagline there was that, you know, you or I, in that sense, may soon be viewed as a terrorist. And there is an interesting thing that we've watched how this has morphed, if you will, throughout the, well, this has gone into overdrive, obviously, after 9/11. But, you know, today it's morphing. It's turning into something else. More and more people who were previously never would have been deemed terrorists are today. Tell us a little bit about this, Larkin, and how you see this kind of progress in the future if this trend that we've been witnessing actually keeps up, where we're going to be at, because it's going to literally, if it continues, in my view, it's going to be checkpoints all over the place. There's going to be people who have to watch over you every step. There will be security to an extent where we basically can't, you know, live our lives normal anymore. And it's almost, I mean, it's already at that stage bad enough, but it could even get worse than this. What do you mean by being a terrorist, Larkin?
Well, it all has to do with the way that the authoritarian mentality twists people's view of morality and the use of physical force, because there, you know, there's an obvious positive connotation to law in most people's heads, and there's an obvious negative connotation to crime in most people's heads, because they've been trained to have that connotation. But if you look in history, it's pretty easy to demonstrate that some really evil, nasty things have been made into law, and that in those cases, the good guys were technically criminals. They broke the law. They disobeyed authority. And, you know, calling something law doesn't magically make it good. And so lots and lots of initiation of violence against innocent people has been done in the name of law. And the way the tyrants talk, that means that if you resist violent oppression, you're by definition a criminal. Because, hey, we legalized our violent oppression. Who are you to resist it? And so my video that I may soon be a terrorist points out that, you know, people have this, the general impression they have in their head when they think of terrorism is somebody harming innocent people to serve some agenda. And I'm not for that. I've never been for that. I never will be for that. But that's not actually the technical definition of terrorism. The technical definition includes the use of threats or violence in an attempt to influence a people or a government and its policies. And I could totally picture being that, because there are so many ways in which the law can be used as a tool of aggressive violence and oppression. And the moment anybody resists by force, that by definition makes them a terrorist. So for example, the you know, if there's some nasty, violent, authoritarian regime that's going around exterminating a particular race or a religion, or, you know, just exterminating some group after passing a law saying they're allowed to, if two people in that group say, I have a gun, let's go hide in a shed, and if they come, we'll shoot at them, those people just became terrorists in, under the technical definition. And there's lots of things that the government has either done or talked about doing, and done it to other people, that if they tried it on me, I would violently resist. And, you know, if they went around trying to randomly disarm everybody, I don't think they're stupid enough to try that in the U.S. They tried their propaganda stunt, and they found out that there are millions of people who would not react kindly to it. So they backed off for now. But if they tried that, I would forcibly resist. Or if they, you know, decided, well, this is an emergency, so we're seizing all the food and water. And, you know, if it's the food my family needs to live and it's ours and you come try to take it, I will forcibly resist. And the thing is, as long as they call their violent aggression and extortion and theft and oppression law, then by definition, forcibly resisting that is terrorism. And I think what has to happen is people have to realize, they have to see through the terminology and the mind control that's built into the terminology until they get to the point of saying, you know, what I've said, I'm not in the slightest bit ashamed of the fact that I'm a criminal. I would be completely ashamed if I wasn't a criminal. Now, I don't commit crimes like theft and assault and murder that hurt other people, because it's bad to hurt other people. But when it comes to arbitrary politician decrees, I break them every chance I get. They're stupid, and in a lot of cases, obeying them is actually immoral. And I, you know, if it comes down to the government doing something, you know, one of those lines I will not let them cross without resisting, I will have no shame at being a terrorist. Again, I would if terrorist meant hurting innocent people or threatening or scaring innocent people, because that's bad. But if the tyrants want to say, us stomping on you and stealing your stuff and treating you like dirt, that's law, and you resisting is crime and terrorism, then I'll say, okay, well, then I'm a criminal and terrorist and don't really care. I only care if I'm doing the right thing. And through a lot of history, the people doing the right thing were technically terrorists. because they were forcibly resisting government policies and government legislation and using violence or the threat of violence to try to persuade a government to stop doing that.
Yeah.
And you know, one of the most obvious examples, which I mentioned in the video, is the colonists at Lexington in this country who said, we're not putting down our guns. They were absolutely terrorists under the current definition of U.S. law of what terrorism is. They used the threat of violence to try to change government policy, which at that time was the British Crown saying, you have to hand over your guns. And they said, no, we're going to change your policy by shooting at you if you try to take our guns. That made them terrorists, technically, you know, specifically speaking, under current U.S. law. And the people who resist the Nazis were terrorists under current U.S. law, because it doesn't even say just tries to persuade this government. If some other tyrannical government somewhere else is stomping on its people and the people resist, under U.S. law, they're terrorists. And so I think it has to come to the point where people escape the mind control built into this language to the point where they say, I don't want to be a bad person, but I don't at all mind being a criminal or a terrorist when the attacker, the evil person, calls his aggression law and policy. You can call it anything you want. If it's evil, I'm going to resist it. And I don't care what you call me when I resist it, I'm still going to resist it. And so people, again, it comes back to the thing of people have to separate their authoritarian indoctrination from their actual moral code, because there's a giant contradiction there. And as long as people measure their own goodness by how well they obey the ruling class, the world's just kind of doomed. If that's what makes you a good person is you bow to the people in power, the world is doomed. If you figure out that sometimes you have to resist the people in power, then there's some hope for the world. But that's what this rhetoric and propaganda is designed to do, is train people to feel bad about standing up for what's right when the aggressor calls himself authority.
Yeah. What people have to realize is that the terminology changes as well. And soon enough, a behavior, let's say, or an action or even an inaction might define you as a terrorist, and then you'll be on that list, you know. And this is how they're playing the game. And soon enough, then, you know, as I was trying to get to, I think that in a world and in a society or in a country or under a world government that has this kind of rule set, then, if you will, I mean, can you imagine just the horrible conditions under such a regime? But everyone, you know, due to the nature of how this one has evolved, if you will, people still seem to be kind of under the spell of it, although they might be, you know, part of being those who are targeted, if you're following what I'm getting at, Larkin.
Right. And I think there's, you know, as much as there are lots and lots of people still falling for the propaganda and still like scared of terrorists that are made up and they don't even really grasp what the word means, I think like a lot of people ask me about fleeing the country, fleeing the United States. And I know people who have, and I totally sympathize and support people who do, because it's turning into a police state. The reason I'm not doing that and the reason I have no intention of leaving is, as many sort of mindless authoritarian sheep as there are in this country, I think there are a higher percentage of people here whose minds have escaped the authoritarian mind control than I see anywhere else. And, you know, I haven't traveled the whole world, so mostly I base that on what, you know, other people I've talked to say.
Right.
That there are millions of Americans who have gotten to the point where they're comfortable with saying, I won't commit aggression against another human being, but if you want to call me a criminal or terrorist, I don't really care. I know I'm on the side of justice, and I don't want government's approval. I don't want its permission. I don't want it to like me. I don't want its blessing. I want it to leave me alone, and I understand that I have the right to defend myself if it doesn't. And that mental escape, that being free in your mind, is the only way to ever achieve, you know, freedom of in body.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, as long as somebody thinks they're beholden to a ruling class, they're a slave forever. They think they're supposed to be a slave, so why would they ever end up being free? And so I still see a lot of people. Yeah, it's a minority and not a very big minority either, but it's still in the millions of people who are escaping the authoritarian mind control and realizing, I don't need your permission. I don't care what you call law. I don't care what you call crime. I go by my own conscience. I go by the non-aggression principle. I go by it's not okay to attack other people. I have my own moral code. I don't need the politicians telling me what's right and wrong. And when they come out and call evil law, I don't care. I'm going to resist it. And if they call me names, I won't care then either. And that's the mentality. You know, the only people who are ever going to fix this are people with that mentality. And there are a lot of them in this country. And the sort of good news, it sounds a little elitist and condescending, but the sort of good news is I think the vast majority of people in this country and in the world are irrelevant to the outcome. The people who vote and think what they're told to think, and, you know, they're not going to make any difference in either direction. Like, they're not going to come to my house to try to disarm me. You know, they might vote for somebody too, but whoopee-doo, who cares? They're not going to fight on the side of good, and they're not going to fight on the side of evil. They're just going to kind of sit there and watch. So I don't care about them. They're not part of the equation. To me, the equation, the only parts of the equation that matter are the control freaks who really think they have the right to rule, and the certain number of victims who think they don't have the right to rule.
Yeah.
And that they aren't a legitimate government. Those are the only actual relevant playing pieces on the board. And the majority of people who just sort of have their vague opinions but aren't going to do anything in either direction, I think it's always been through all of history that the majority has been irrelevant to the outcome. It, you know, the only people who ever made any difference were, little groups of troublemaker minorities who dared to think something new or try something new or do something new or resist the status quo or the powers that be, and then everybody else sort of dawdled along afterwards and were, you know, slowly dragged forward closer to humanity. So I'm not at all bothered by the fact that, you know, well, 70 or 80% of people are just sort of mindless state worshipers. I don't care. They won't make any difference in either direction, good or bad. But I see a lot of people who will make a difference in the right direction, who have escaped the authoritarian mindset, and nothing in the world is ever going to make them go back to feeling an obligation to bow to a ruling class. You know, they can shoot me, but they can't ever make me feel beholden to them again.
Yeah. Well, as you said, that's where you are free, and that's where the freedom begins. It can enslave your body, but, you know, if you're not free in the mind, it doesn't really matter. It's kind of just a sliding scale, if you will, from there, and then at that point anything could happen if you're imprisoned, if you will, in your mind or in your attitude, as you say. And also these are, as you're talking about the general public then, or the majority, I guess we could say, then these are not the folks that the government has in mind initially, I think. These are those who follow orders, if you will, and the rules, and just living in accordance to what they've set up. Is it kind of like it's just the programming running as it's supposed to? I think if they're concerned with anybody, it is the people that, you know, we've been talking about and speaking to here as well, that these are people who are thinking about these things. They're trying to change things. They're trying to, in that sense, just live independently from the structure as it exists, etc. But do you think as well that these people are, how should I put it, more targeted by what's going on right now in the world? I mean, we can talk about things like gun control, for example, or other things that I've kind of seen this trend that they're potentially trying to actually coax these people out to try to kind of get them to stand out more from the crowd in order to be able to target them. I mean, I know that might sound paranoid and all that, but what do you think about that idea?
Well, it's funny because I actually think they're totally doing that, but I think it's hugely backfiring. I see a lot of indications that the current control freaks in the U.S. are getting enormously desperate and really stupid.
Yeah.
My first book was How to Be a Successful Tyrant. I give the current control freaks in Washington a D- at being tyrants because they are doing every stupid thing you could possibly do. And it's an indication of their own fear. They know they're losing their power. And that they never say that because, you know, their propaganda has to be, we're big and bad and we know everything and can do anything we want, which is a huge lie. But if they can scare people enough to obey, then it's a lie worth telling.
Well, that's right.
From their vantage point. But when they do things like come at the, you know, they have these flyers that were accidentally leaked and it's like, oh, you better watch out for potential domestic terrorists. And here's a list of things to watch for. And it's like people who mention the Constitution and
right. yep.
ask about the authority for a traffic stop. And, you know, if you're in power and you describe 50 million people in your description of potential terrorists, you're kind of in trouble.
Yeah.
They're identifying their enemies as being tens of millions of people. And it's sort of a strange kind of honesty because it's the parasites basically saying, look at all these people who want to disobey us and want to like not give us their money and not obey and challenge our spying on them and controlling them and monitoring them. But, you know, it's one thing for a king to come out and say, we found these three people saying bad things about me, so we hung them. But if a king comes out and says, I just found out that half of you think I'm bad, we're going to hang half of you.
Yeah.
That isn't going to turn out well for the king.
Well, are they, one thing I've been struggling with, I guess, as you know, we watch all this stuff going on in the media and as you say, kind of these, they're leaked, quote unquote, leaked things coming out that they're exposing certain things. And I'm struggling with this idea, Larkin, that sometimes they seem so brilliant, the power, you know, mongers out there on the top, and in other cases they seem so incredibly stupid. And at certain points, I don't know which is which. I don't know what side to take. I'm constantly going back and forth between this because in certain cases it seems like, wait a minute, there's got to be a secondary, a third or fourth motive behind why they are, you know, releasing this information or making it so blatantly obvious. You know, it's kind of like Obama's birth certificate discussion, that whole thing. When you look at the document and the PDF, you realize that, hey, it's the worst, you know, Photoshop job
worst
ever.
Worst forgery ever.
Yeah. And right. What the hell is going on? You know, it's obvious that they want to have a portion of the people knowing that, you know, that this is what they're doing. Knowing that this is going on. And at the same time, those people are going to end up, who are they going to end up struggling with? It's not going to be ultimately the politicians. It's going to be their maybe family members or friends who are doubting that, you know, Obama's birth certificate is a fraud. Just to take one example, this is, you know, there are myriad of other examples out there. But, you know, I'm just wondering, is there something else going on here?
Well, it's hard to tell. Like, it's, you know, it's a giant chess game. But overall, in the last few years, I've become convinced that the tyrants running the game, which is, I think it's usually above the people whose names we know. You know, Obama's right. just an idiot puppet, just like just about every president before him. He plays the part. He's enough of a narcissistic sociopath that he wants the attention and the power. And but he isn't the mastermind. I mean,
sure, of course not.
He's a bonehead. But I see a lot of indications that they really are, over the past 50 years or so, the tyrants are becoming completely incompetent, which I love. I think it's outstanding. And I try not to jump to that conclusion, like, well, maybe they have an ulterior motive and they want this thing to happen. And like I know a bunch of people think that that this economic depression is engineered. I think it may have started that way. But I do not think this is going the way they want, the way the tyrants wanted it to, because for an engineered economic disaster to help them, like I think the Great Depression, which may soon need a new name, but the Great Depression was totally engineered and it worked perfectly because they duped the bonehead people into saying, "Oh my gosh, trouble everywhere! I know we need a giant welfare state."
Yeah,
and like
yeah.
if you can dupe people into doing that, that serves the tyrants. But if you crash an economy and lots of the population is saying, stop taking our money, stop bossing us around, we don't want your help, you're the problem, leave us alone, we're going to stop paying taxes, we're going to go buy guns, we hate you, leave us alone. That kind of tells me the tyrant stunt didn't really work if it was on purpose.
Right.
And like I look at the example of Obama's whole propaganda campaign of, you know, the Sandy Hook thing and the emotionalism and going to all his buddies in Hollywood and demonize these guns and we need an assault weapon ban. And and again, even though it didn't do anything last time. But the end result was record numbers of gun sales and ammunition sales, which means, wow, you just blew it. The tyrants completely blew it. What they tried to do had the exact opposite effect. Lots more people have guns and ammo now who didn't before.
And so just let me interject there. It's not that they are seeking to, in the extension, in the long run down the road, try to seek an active conflict, if you will, with these people in order to, you know, start a close to what would be a civil war in America. Is that maybe what they're going for here?
I wouldn't rule out them trying that, but if they try that, that will be their last mistake. Because if they, you know, if you can demonize your opponents in the dissidents, and, you know, if there's 100 or even 1,000 in a country of millions, and you can say they're horrible and bad and we're going to stomp on them and make an example and enforce law and order, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. But right now they're literally pointing at 50 million people and saying, we think you might be terrorists. If the government says we're going to come disarm 50 million people, there won't be a Congress the next week. And it won't be from them getting voted out. It's way too late for the tyrants to win this by brute force. And what makes me scared is that when tyrants get desperate, they tend to get really violent and really stupid.
Yeah.
And so even if they lose in the long run, they have the capacity to do a lot of damage. But if they want to say, that's it, anybody who mentions the Constitution, we're going to round them up and put them into FEMA camps. And you know, I know some people who are worried about that. Oh, they're going to round up everybody who says anything about this. Yep. I said, do you know how many people that is? You think they're going to round up 10 million armed people?
Yeah, I'd like to see the infrastructure on that, you know?
Right. How much manpower is that going to take? Because as one of those 10 million, I can tell you, if I'm the first, if they come to my house first, they'll probably get me because I won't suspect it. If they come into my house second, I'm going to kill a lot of them. Because the first guy is going to make the news and they're going to say, hey, guess what? They're just randomly rounding up people who don't like the government. And if, you know, you can't suddenly do that to 10 million people at once without anyone noticing.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, you know, by myself, I'm very easy to kill and very easy to beat up and whatever. I'm one person who cares. But to pretend that they could pull that off to 10 million people, I think even the tyrants at this point know it's complete bluff. And I think the reason they're leaking things like, we know everything, we're spying on everybody, when you see all your emails, is they're desperately trying to get people to shut up and be scared. But I think it's the exact opposite. I mean, if you're the big bad guy in charge and you have the NSA and go spy on everybody, and the NSA says, we spied on everybody, and there's 50 million people talking about how much they hate you. Like, what do you do with that information? Like, oh, darn. Well, maybe it's time to run away. It's not like, you know, if you find one or two dissidents, yeah, you can go, you know, knock them off in the middle of the night or something. But I know the discussion out there in this country. And if the NSA is spying, what they're telling their masters is tens of millions of people hate you and they don't want to give you money or obey you anymore. And that's kind of intelligence that, what do you do with it as a tyrant? Like, well, let's go lock them all up. Like, I'm sorry, you can't lock up 50 million people, especially since they're 50 million people with guns. And the whole point is they're getting to the point where they're going to resist you. I don't even care. And I gave a talk up in New Hampshire about this called Monitor This, Fascists, about the fact that the more we think they're spying on us, the louder and more public we should be about it. Because if they secretly spy and hear 50 million people saying, we hate you, we're not going to obey you anymore, then they just go, oh, well, like, what are we supposed to do about it? You know, the point of the spying was the chilling effect, to try to scare people into not saying what they really think. But if everybody says, I don't care if you spy on me, like, they don't need to spy on me, I do it in public, like I'm doing right now.
They have to know that this will have an adverse effect. The reaction will be the opposite, right? They're that stupid, I guess.
I think they're so stupid that they actually thought, hey, if we tell everyone we're spying on them, people will sort of simmer down and be more obedient. And that was hardly the response. Now, like,
nope.
Another several million are like, why are you spying on us, you fascist psychos? And so it isn't – every step they take is making it worse. And again, the thing I'm scared of is that they're going to try some, you know, another drastic false flag thing, or they're going to try martial law. Yeah. I mean, if they try outright martial law, I'm not the slightest bit scared. I'm not even going to make it to my gun safe, because I think in a matter of hours, there will be lots of dead fascists and the rest will say, we quit. First of all, we don't really want to attack our fellow Americans. Second of all, they outgun and outnumber us like 1,000 to 1. So we're done. We're not playing this anymore.
It might sound that I'm reaching here, but I'm just trying to, you know, kind of eliminate all the different variables out there. That's why I'm keeping pushing this. But DARPA, you know, they've been a development of, you know, urban warfare. The Pentagon has even, you know, again, while it's one of those released things, right? But they've been saying that, you know, that the next theatrical scene and all that's going to be, you know, in urban type scenarios and stuff like that. They have the drones now. They have, you know, all this kind of technology at their disposal. I mean, I don't think that that's going to help either, but it might get, you know, give them a little bit of on the way towards that. But yeah, what do you think about the technology and the weaponry that they do have at their disposal?
All their toys, all their plans, all their secret agendas and stuff don't matter at all compared to the battle for people's minds.
The
philosophical issue. Because if you have, and this was my response when the story came out that they bought like 1.6 billion rounds of ammunition. Mm-hmm. I said, I don't care. How many trigger fingers do they have? Because I'm pretty sure they don't have 1.6 billion trigger fingers.
Right, right.
Since that's like several times the entire population of the country. I don't care how many bullets you have. I care if you have somebody who's willing to shoot me and the other 10 or 50 million people who don't really like you anymore. And in a case of, and I know one of the things they're most scared of, and I've talked to some people, and I don't, I'll speak in vague terms and not mention names, but they are. It shows up in the fact of how terrified they are of their own veterans. You know, they're American government painting U.S. military veterans as potential terrorists. Well, I'm here to say it isn't just former soldiers; it's active duty soldiers. And there are a lot of them who remember that they pledged an oath to defend the Constitution, not Congress, not the president, but the Constitution. And I know the people in power are scared to death that if they give the order for martial law, there will be a shootout inside their own forces and it won't even get around to making it to the streets. And it may, even if it's a tiny percentage, you know, if you have your big bad army to go oppress people, if 1% of your army is willing to resist and you know, spread dissent and disobedience, your army sort of fizzles into a nothing really quick. And so I know that they're scared of things like Oath Keepers, the organization of cops and soldiers who have this list of things of, yeah, here's some stuff we're not going to do. We're not going to disarm people. We're not going to round people up if they aren't charged with things. We're not going to. And to have, you know, they're looking at the chess game and they're starting to look suspiciously at their own pawns. Like, well, we can move this pawn over here and hope he doesn't turn on us, and then move this pawn over here. And, you know, if they tried martial law, I think it would, so much would happen so quickly. And, I, you know, a bunch of soldiers, I think, would stupidly obey orders because the power of the belief in authority is pretty huge. And then they'd shoot a few Americans and then they'd say, I don't want to do this anymore. Or they'd kill themselves. There's a really high suicide rate in the military already. And that's just from killing foreigners. You know, if they're on the streets of America shooting at Americans, and the Americans are shooting back and it's like, wow, this is like my town. Why am I having a shootout with my neighbors? I don't think it's at all something that the tyrants can sustain. And again, it comes back to how much of their power is illusion, because Congress, you know, Congress isn't going to come to your house to take your guns. They're going to try to send their mercenaries. Yeah. If their mercenaries say, we're not going to do that, literally, Congress ceases to be a power. Like, all of their power comes from people imagining an obligation to obey, including their enforcers and their victims. When that goes away, and we saw little glimpses of this in, I guess it was Greece, and I forget where else.
Cyprus.
Where the government says, all right, fire on those protesters, and the soldiers say, we don't really want to. And for a second, there's suddenly a glimpse of the fact that, yeah, if their mercenaries say no, the people in power aren't people in power. They're just kind of bloated windbags standing there saying stuff. And nobody's paying attention to them. And I think the U.S. Congress and the president would quickly turn into that if they order something and enough of the military says, yeah, we're not going to do that. Or even if it starts and there's a shootout and some of the military commanders say, no, this is messed up. We're not playing this anymore.
And that would call their bluff, obviously. And I mean, it's obvious that they want to seem more powerful, in our eyes than they actually are. So, but just basically to kind of clarify that, the incompetence and the paranoia as well that we see on behalf of the government, that is the genuine article. That's really what's going on.
Yeah, because that's not something they want us to know about. The fact that they're scared of their subjects. They are terrified of the U.S. Congress is terrified of the American people. And that just totally spells the end of this empire, and good riddance to it. Like, you, if there's this tiny little percentage of dissidents that you can demonize and isolate and kill or cage or do some nasty thing to, you know, then the tyrant can stay in power. But when it's a huge portion of a population, a heavily armed population too, you're just doomed. You know, they lost the battle for people's minds, and they're never going to get that back. They're not even trying anymore. I mean, they're jumping for brute force control because they realize they have completely lost control of people's minds. Of, you know, again, the minority that matters. I don't care about, you know, 70% of irrelevant people who do as they're told. I care about the minority who dares to resist and disobey. If they don't feel an obligation to bow to the king is doomed. And I'm a little scared of what vicious, nasty, violent things the king might try. But this is over. The game is over. The U.S. empire is absolutely 100% doomed. And I just hope it falls on the mud gracefully enough and doesn't kill a whole bunch of people on the way down. But there is nothing in the world that will preserve this empire, and nothing that should.
I wanted to, before we round things up over this time, return to the gun issue as well. And, you know, speaking about this point, that I don't understand people who are, and there is a lot of these I've noticed, that they're intelligent enough to see the development of the fascist governments around the world, but yet at the same time, they're against people owning guns, and in the extension, then these guns will be able to aid in the process of protecting themselves against this, you know, fascist government that is emerging and around the world, as I said. And it's very strange to me that people have this aversion to it, and you know, because they've been working very hard. You can see within the U.S. and specifically, since, you know, so many other countries already are disarmed, that they're trying to demonize, you know, the weapons. They're trying to, you know, get rid of them and everything that Feinstein and everyone else has been doing in the last few years. But just to clarify that as well, that in your view, it's not something that they're going to be able to pull off, because again, it seems like a very, very 50-50 almost schism in America right now, where a lot of people are very anti, you know, people having guns, basically, because this is to blame for everything. And then on the other hand, you have these people who are intelligent enough, in my view, to see that, wait a minute, if you have a government developing in this way, it's even more important at this stage that people actually have the capability of defending themselves, their own families and the neighbors, etc. Your take, Larkin.
Yeah, well, that's a perfect example of the, again, it might sound a little bit mean, but the, you know, if there's this 50-50 disagreement, there's 50% of the population that thinks we shouldn't have guns. Well, guess what? They don't. I don't care what they think.
Right.
They're not the ones who are going to come and try to disarm me. And the 50% who thinks we should have guns do, which makes them really hard to disarm. So the, you know, for all the propaganda and all the people falling for Obama's garbage, they're completely irrelevant. They don't matter in the slightest. You know, they could say, yeah, we have to ban these things. You know, well, are you going to come to my house to try to take mine? If so, what do you intend to use to take it from me? Because you don't have one. So they really are like it's they're spectators. They have nothing to do with the final outcome. So to me, it's 50% are completely irrelevant to the to the whole game. And the other 50% are heavily armed and refuse to be disarmed. And so but so much of that is people in the United States don't want to admit what has always been true everywhere at all times, which is the only limits on tyrants are not what the people think. It's not public opinion. It's not elections. It's not the political process. The only thing that ever limits tyrants is the ability and willingness of their victims to resist. And there's a great Frederick Douglass quote. I can almost do it from memory. I'll probably get it wrong. Find out the exact amount of injustice that people will tolerate, and you have found out the exact amount that will be inflicted upon them. And yeah. It's like the limits of tyrants are prescribed by the endurance of those they oppress. Meaning the, you know, for all the people out there, we're going to vote this. And this is a big thing about the gun control thing. I don't think Congress cared at all about the calls going in saying, I want you to oppose this. I want you to support this. I want you to ban them. I want you to not ban them. I think the only thing that registered, because they understand the game. The only thing they registered is when they looked out, and they're not going to publicize this, but they looked out and they saw there are millions of people who, if we try to do this, will violently resist. So yeah. Never mind. It's not because they decided to care about what we want. It's because they realized we cannot win this game. If we go try to disarm them, we die. So maybe we'll try again later and see if we can change their minds.
Well, exactly. And that's another point I just want to bring up here briefly. I think that they, maybe with that realization, if they haven't understood that already, and this is something they have been working on for years, but I think that they're kind of regrouping and thinking, all right, we have to get earlier, you know, get the people in an earlier state in their life. We have to target the, you know, the school children and everything else, because that's, you know, another factor that is kind of running alongside this as well. They've always been long-term planners in that sense. I think that they want to try to just basically instill this idea in people to, you know, not having to want to have guns. That's why you see in every movie, basically, when a gun is present or something, everyone freaks out, you know, right. You know, you even had these Hollywood celebrities going out there and talking about how much anti-gun they are, and then they're like making their millions on these action movies and bombs, right, and machine guns and all the, you know, all the double standards you can think of is coming out there. So anyway, the education of the young, if you will, that's what they're going for, I think.
Yeah, but they're doomed. I mean, literally the best they can hope for is to get more people into the category of irrelevant, because that's all the obedient status. That's all they are. They're adding more people to the big group of irrelevant people who don't make any difference. If you can't take the people who believe in freedom and drag them back into supporting tyranny, you lose. The tyrant just loses. And they're not doing that. In fact, there's a huge slide in the other direction. And nothing they can do can stop it. In fact, like I said, they've been doing a lot of really stupid things. And a lot of it is it's the proverbial boiled frog that I'm sure almost everybody's already heard of. The frog is starting to notice that the heat is being turned up, and the boneheads in power are like, quit, turn it up to full. And that's how you freak the frog out, and he jumps out and you lose. But the fact that they're jumping towards police state garbage, and it's coming out, they're spying on everybody, and they're talking about indefinite detention and, you know, drone strikes against people, and yeah, we could do that to an American on American soil if we decided he's an enemy combatant. Like, this is not the way to win loyal subjects who trust you.
Yeah.
So they're jumping to blatant fear. They're jumping to outright terrorism. Well, maybe we can scare people into obeying us. But no, you can't. If you're trying to victimize and control and subjugate 300 million people, and 100 million of them are armed, You're not going to do it by fear. If they lose the feeling of obligation to bow to you, you're finished. Which is why I say the U.S. empire is absolutely finished. They're not winning converts from our side back to theirs. Nobody is going in that direction. Nobody who believes in self-ownership and freedom and voluntarism and all that and the non-aggression principle is waking up one day and saying, you know, I love collectivism again and I'm all for government controlling everything. Right. Nobody's going in that direction. And so even if they manage to keep indoctrinating kids into the irrelevant compliant sheep category, who cares? There's already enough millions of people that this empire is doomed. And again, my only concern is in their stupidity and desperation, I expect the tyrants to do some seriously nasty, violent things that are going to hurt a lot of people. But it isn't going to save them. It isn't going to save their empire. It'll probably make it crash faster. But that's my only concern. This game is won. And the problem is the tyrants are too stupid to realize they lost. They lost the philosophical battle. And right now, the numbers might not look at it, might not look like it. But the 70 or 80% who are still loyal statists, they don't matter. Their vote doesn't count. It's like the 50% who thinks we shouldn't have guns. Well, I don't care what they think. They don't have guns. They're not going to do anything about it. They can have their opinion all they want. If the people who have the guns don't want to give them up, they win. And the tyrants lose. And so it's, they lost. And my biggest wish is I hope they figure out that they lost in time, that they don't decide to like murder millions of people and go completely haywire.
Right, right.
But I don't have a heck of a lot of confidence in, you know, they've done some pretty drastically evil things before. So who knows what they'll try, but it isn't going to work. You know, even the most drastic false flag thing imaginable is not going to make people who love freedom today suddenly go back to loving tyranny. It'll just make them get really mad and go wipe out Congress or something. So, and I hope we can get there. I hope we could just let this empire fall on its face in the mud and be done with it, you know, relatively peacefully.
Yeah.
But that's not usually how tyrants let things happen.
So good and positive, if you will, in the long run, but potentially maybe volatile in the short run here, dangerous. So we need to stay alert, if you will, on that. But by the way, before I forget here, and last question for you, Larkin. Who are some of your favorite anarchist philosophers or writers? Anyone you'd like to recommend for their reading list, if you will?
There are a bunch. Stefan Molyneux, I definitely put near the top. He's freedomainradio.com. He has like 12 million podcasts.
We're going to try to really get him back, by the way, on the show. So hopefully he'll be upcoming here in a couple of weeks for folks who want to hear more on him.
Yeah, that'd be great. He's definitely at the top of my list. Mm. Just very... very educated, way more so than I am, very informed about all sorts of things of history and economics and very well-spoken and respectable, unlike me.
No, you're well-spoken and you're respectable.
I'm proud of being unrespectable. and then there, you know, Lou Rockwell, Mark Stevens, Jim Davies, you know, whoever I list, I'm going to forget three people and later think, oh, I forgot to mention him. But there's a lot of people out there who are now, you know, pick this up and understand it and are spreading it. And you can't make this go away. This is an idea that will spread until it covers the world. And no amount of violence is going to stop it. And certainly no amount of rational argument is going to stop it, because there isn't a rational argument for government. I mean, I've said this before, that I think the superstition in government is completely doomed to fail. And when it fails, it's gone forever, for the same reason that the idea that the earth is flat or the idea that the sun goes around us was doomed to sooner or later fail and never come back, because the evidence will keep being there. And even if it takes humanity a zillion years before they look at it, when people finally understand something based on reason and evidence, they're not going to go back to a provably insane superstition. And that's what government is. And lots more people are coming to see that. And it's only going in that direction. Nobody's going back. So however fast or slow the progress is, the cult of statism is absolutely doomed. And I just hope to push it as far as I possibly can in my lifetime. And I think it won't even be that long until we see pretty big pockets of humanity living in a stateless, voluntary society while various empires crumble and shoot at each other and scream bloody murder and stuff like that. I think it'll be a long time before the whole planet is like that, but I think we are very close to seeing big pockets of what humanity actually should be.
Yeah, well, that would be a fantastic example, I think, as well, and for other people and for other groups that want to do this as well. So I do hope you're right, Larkin. Well, this has been great. Excellent having you back again. Thank you for this. Give us your website again. And also, by the way, if you want to mention, your titles and if you have anything upcoming, what's next for you or anything like that, please go ahead and do so.
Sure. My main website is just larkenrose.com, which is LarkenRose.com. And on that website, I have my main book, The Most Dangerous Superstition, for sale. There's also my novel, The Iron Web. Both of them are also available on Amazon.com. And rather than bragging about it myself, I like to just nudge people to go read the reviews of both of those books on Amazon, because I think it's like 32 out of 32 gave it 5 stars and stuff. So I've been rather pleased with the reviews. I would sort of give an extra mention to The Iron Web because a lot of people like it as a way to introduce other people to the ideas because it's a novel and apparently people like the story in and of itself. And it's because, if you tell somebody, hey, sit down, I'm going to lecture you about political philosophy for an hour, surprisingly, most people don't want that.
That's right.
But if you can put it into something that's hopefully entertaining and keeps their attention, that seems to be a better way to get that to people. And then there's my YouTube channel, which is just youtube.com/LarkenRose. And I at any given moment, I have like a dozen videos that are still in the works. One I'll be releasing soon is called The Rules, which makes fun of people's weird, twisted view of, well, there has to be a centralized rulemaker and why that never turns out well. And some longer term projects that I don't even dare to mention at the moment because I have no idea how long it'll be before they're done. I drop a quick plug for a fairly huge feature length presentation thing I did called It Can't Happen Here, which you can find on my YouTube channel. For all the people who think that there's some magic spell on this piece of dirt that makes it immune from tyranny, it pretty thoroughly shreds that. And I think it introduces a lot of evidence and information that's undisputed. It's publicly available, but most Americans have never heard it and have never seen it about, the foreign tyrannies and what their constitution said and how they came about and what their leaders said. And a lot of it, it's really creepy how much it sounds like the United States. So that was a recent thing I finished.
Very good. Look out for new videos, LarkenRose.com. In the meantime, we'll get you all the material. Great stuff, Larkin. Thanks so much. Keep up the great work.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, folks, thank you for listening and an extended blessing to all our members. You guys are fantastic. Please take good care of yourself and we will talk to you soon.